In association with AnnaValleyShook.com, it's the Ghost Show, your original LSU podcast. Coming at you. Week seven of the college football season. A little big one this week. Getting ready, Patrick Morris, out there with me today. What's up, Pat?
Not much. Ready, coming off of a good
Florida.
Win. Ready for another one, yes.
LSU, Florida. Top 10 matchup. Now, we build this as like a few weeks ago. We were all excited about, you know, Auburn coming up and everything like that. It turns out Auburn's kind of a self-destructive kind of thing right now going on. But at the time, you know, still a solid victory for LSU. Since that time, LSU's kind of slept walk through the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you want to call Saturday a sleepwalk or not, maybe the first half. But, I mean, if you want to call 390 yards rushing and 228 yards passing, 650 yards of offensive sleepwalk, so be it. But nevertheless, LSU improves to 5-0-3-0 in the SEC with a 45-24 victory over the South Carolina Gamecocks. We will be talking about that today as well as previewing the big matchup in Baton Rouge, 6 o'clock ESPN, LSU, Florida. Me and Patrick will be talking about that. And a little bit later on, we'll be bringing on Andy Hutchins from AlligatorArmy.com or SB Nation brother site, sister site, whatever you want to call it. He will be joining us a little bit later. But first, as always, ways to get in touch with the show. You can visit, first of all, visit AnnaValleyShook.com at www.AnnaValleyShook.com. You can tweet at the site, at Valley Shook. You can tweet at the show. You can download, first of all, you can download the podcast to your smartphone device via iTunes for free. Just go to iTunes, search The Ghost Show, G-E-A-U-X-S-H-O-W. You can tweet us at also. Tweet me at Ghost Show Carry, G-A-U-X, Show Carry, C-A-R-E-Y, Patrick Morris.
Oh, and I am at Cat Godfather, K-A-T-T-G-O-D-F-A-T-H-E-R.
Very good, man. Very good. Also, you can go ahead and like us on Facebook and stay with us. Stay abreast of things on that as well. So let's kick things right off. Also, podcast behind the scenes, the PFL attempt. Cajun Billy D. Williams, creator of the Ghost Show, managing editor of Anna Valley Shook, SB Nation site, and pushing the buttons and doing everything behind the scenes as much as he can, feeding us the stats and the information and make me and Patrick sound so lovely across the podcasting airwaves. So South Carolina. We all know the story. Again, we apologize. We didn't come to y'all with a South Carolina preview. Couldn't coordinate our schedules last week, but we're here today, full force, to break that down. Talk about Florida. LSU, hats off to the university for bringing. First of all, giving us a bonus tailgate. That's besides the point. It was more or less a university that was in this position 10 years ago with Hurricane Katrina and, you know, and sappy Arizona State. We had to travel there. We lost the home game, and LSU opened its doors, brought South Carolina in, the LSU band, everybody knows by now, learned that fight song in their alma mater, and just kind of opened it up. The restaurants were offering discounts on meals on Friday night, all weekend long, I believe, to South Carolina fans, and Just very proud, I guess, to be an alum of that university, Patrick.
We did everything except for give them the game, of course.
Well, you know, that's it
ends. You can only go so far, you know, with hospitality. At a certain point, you have to cut it, and you know, we cut it with the 639 yards or whatever we had.
Yeah, I think they would understand. We have a conference championship we're competing for, and they're in the tank at this point, poor South Carolina. They're struggling. The old ball coach is.
I think he's really kind of contemplating: is this it going to be it for him, or is he going to hang it up in the next year or two, or what he's going to do?
Right, and this could be. This was possibly the last time LSU faced off against the old ball coach. So I think he's going to. He's about close to calling it quits, I believe, if not this year, but in the next year. I guess it depends on the way the rest of the season goes. But nevertheless, LSU once again. Kind of touch and go in the first half a little bit, but broke off in a big way in the second. And, 21-point victory. If you want to talk about the issues, it still can't cover on special teams. Kicking against the wind to the north side, we had to pooch it because we just – a short kick – you know, wouldn't have done us any good because we couldn't cover. So we just went pooch it to an up back and let him go from the 35, 40-yard line, kept giving him short fields.
It just blows my mind. They can't even decide on a kicker. That's the problem. You can't decide on a kicker. You can't fill a lane. I mean, you can see it from our vantage point, Kerry. You got to admit, in the stadium, you can see it. We're filling the lane. You got eight people on one half the field, and you got three covering the other half. Well, where's the runner going to go? He's going to go to the half with just three guys.
If he's a smart runner, yeah. You know that was that guy's first touch ever as a college football player?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But
anything we can do to help, guys?
Yeah, hey, we do what we can. We're giving. We were giving in more ways than one, you know, this past weekend. Getting back to the kicker, though, I don't understand the switch to Cameron Gamble. I really don't, because Domain was kicking a ball.
You know what it was? He kicked the ball out of bounds on that one, and he was in the doghouse for two.
I mean,
that's what it was. Let's just call it what it is. I'm telling you, that's what it was.
At this point, they get the ball to 35. It's only 10 yards further than a touchback. What the hell? I mean,
I know. Well, hell, we just soon kick it out every time. Or why not just sky kick it and make them fair catch it somewhere around a 25?
Yeah, I mean, that's they got to work on some stuff because kickoff coverage, it was bound to happen sooner or later.
Somebody needs to get involved. If Les Miles isn't involved on kickoff stuff yet with Bradley Dale Pivito, if he's running it by himself, we in trouble.
Mm-hmm. So that's a concern, especially when you go into your meaty SEC schedule here coming up. And, you know, Florida definitely has.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the guy from – I was watching the Florida game the other night. I'm looking at the Missouri kicker, and they were just praising that Missouri punter to no end. Dude was kicking the ball 65, 70 yards in the air. You know, talking about how good they're special. That's the one thing that even kept that game semi-close. You know, and we can't get our punter. I don't know what's wrong with him this year. No offense, he needs to quit doing interviews and worry about kicking the ball, you know, further than 20 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what his stats were Saturday, but, you know, and again, he was punting with a short field. It was a couple touchbacks, too, so. But still, yeah, he struggled at times. Kickoff coverage struggled at times. You know, just some things that need to get worked out because this is going to cost us a game somewhere. And the propensity of the defense giving up these big plays over the middle of the field.
We've got to cover a tight end.
Yeah,
we have got to cover the tight end coming in the middle because you know, Florida throws to the tight end. I am concerned about that coming up this week.
And they got the ball to Favorite Cooper. Favorite Cooper was going to make a play somewhere. I mean,
you're not going to stop him completely.
No. I mean, granted, you say that, but the LSU offense is scoring points at a rate that we haven't scored probably since 2011. You know, when we're up around, maybe with the exception of the Mississippi State game, we've put up 40, I think, in every game with the exception of Syracuse. So... You know, we're putting up the points, and we do the ground control. We're wearing down Darius Geis. Had himself a nice game on Saturday. So, I mean, he outgained Leonard Fournette. And Leonard Fournette came out again because he kind of came up limping. But I'm sure he's fine. Smart move to just go ahead and sit him the rest of the game.
Oh, yeah, there was no need to put him back in. And the only reason Geis beat him in yardage was the final play of the game.
Yeah, he broke off that long run towards the end. So,
other than that passing game, I thought Harris threw the ball, you know, a lot better with a lot more confidence. You could see him building the confidence as the game went along, you know. And you know, you can tell how a quarterback's building confidence is when he's throwing that out pattern on the money. And he was catching the receivers coming out of the break. The ball was there, even on the ones that he missed. The ball was where it needed to be because if he was going to miss, he missed to the outside or he missed over the top. So you weren't throwing the ball short. So if you're going to miss, he's missing in the right spots.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what you want to do. Yeah, he played a fine game. They got a little bit lucky on a touchdown pass to Doral, but you know sometimes better lucky than good. Auburn went to a national championship a few years ago based on a lucky pass. So I mean,
you know, he throws the ball another foot anyway, higher, and it's right to Doral. So what difference?
Right. Yeah. So I mean, and that was all fine. So I saw some improvement there. Now this week. I think it was a good opportunity to get that passing game worked on because they're going to need to open it up a little bit. Because Florida's going to test you. They're going to stack the box and make you throw.
Oh, they're going to go one on one with our receivers. Our receivers got to make a play.
Guess what? Their cornerbacks are pretty good. You know, there's a little bit of a the debate.
A chip on the shoulder, yep.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a debate. Who's got the better defensive backs? And right now, I think, quite honestly, I think Florida does.
You know what? It's going to be a matter of whose receivers step up in this game. Honestly, I think it's a matter. You know, we got talent. We've got talent at the receiving core. I think we've got more talent at receiver than Florida does. You know, it's a matter of, okay, guys, now you want to prove yourself how good you were coming out of high school. You're doing this, doing that. Prove it. You've got to get off the ball. You've got to get off the chip at the line, and you've got to make a play.
You are correct. You are correct. It's a matter of, I was getting ready to say the same thing you just said, but it's a matter of, you know, attacking the ball and going after the ball and not just kind of, you know, waiting for the ball to come to you, because MDBs are going to make a play on the ball. You have to make that play on the ball. You have to be aggressive. You have as much right to the ball as the defensive back does. You need to realize that. You got to get off those jams if they decide to jam you. Running wise, I think I don't know if you saw the stat, Patrick, but Fournette out of the shotgun Saturday, I think it was 6 carries for 121 yards. And in the shotgun, it's like 14 for 39, something like that. That goes without saying. We've been saying that for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Spread the field.
Oh,
three
exactly.
Wide receiver sets, run out the pistol. Always
let him see
well.
The field and then go.
Yeah. And nothing I'm worried about, and I got to tell you, nothing I'm a little worried about. It's good. Our run blocking has been solid, awesome all year. Pass protection at times, a little shaky. I'm a little worried about that. Maybe because they don't have enough in-game experience with it. Because we dropped back. This is the most we've dropped back to pass all season long. I think it was a career high in completions and attempts and yards for Harris on Saturday. 2 touchdowns. Again, took care of the ball. No interceptions. Very key. I think we turned them over, once?
I believe so.
Deion Jones had an interception. Deion Jones had an interception. If I'm not mistaken, off a
and we just
pass.
Had the one fumble at the end of the game, Brissett.
Oh, did we fumble? Okay.
We did. After he did that, you know, Fournette did his leadership role and kind of took him on the side and you know, just kind of said, look, buddy, you got to pick it up. Let's go. You got to go again.
Well, good for him.
Yep.
So, I'm glad the NCAA came to the senses and let him do what he wants to do as far as auctioning off that jersey.
I think they had a lot of media pressure is what they had all of a sudden. Because came out right away and said, boom, and then all the media was like, oh, stupid, and, you know, all of this. All of a sudden they came back real quick after that and said, nope, good idea, you know.
Yeah, what's he got to gain?
What's it going to hurt? He's not benefiting from it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just retarded.
And that's between, as far as I'm concerned, it's between Fournette and the university. I mean, the jersey belongs to the university or the athletic program.
Exactly.
So I don't know where they put it up for bid. I don't know exactly how that all happens after that. I'm going to just throw it up on eBay and say, hey, here you go. And some kind of other means that they're using.
I'm sure they're going to offer it to a couple of donors and say, hey, you want $100,000 for this jersey. And they'll go to the victim.
So.
C'est la vie. But other than that, you know, defensively, though, we did give up plays, and it was a third-string walk-on quarterback, but we didn't give up all that many. You know, obviously, we were it was weird the way the game was going back and forth. We were we could score at will, it seemed like. Okay, when we decided, all right, well, this drive we need to score, we just scored. It's not like they could stop us. It's just a matter of how we wanted to score and what we did. But defensively, it's like, you expected – I guess maybe I was expecting the big play, you know, a little bit big play, a little more pressure on the quarterback. That's one thing that I'm a little concerned about is we're not getting enough pressure on the quarterback. I don't know what you're seeing out there, but that's kind of what I'm seeing. We're either that or they're doing 3-step drops and just trying to nail it over the middle guy, and we're not having a chance to get the pressure down.
Yeah, and I didn't get running. You know, it's watching it from the stands, you don't really get a good feel of how that's all playing out, but I didn't sit down and rewatch today. I need to see, because we were getting to the quarterback pretty effectively early on in the season, and we haven't gotten to the quarterback much since the Auburn game. I think maybe only a couple sacks since the Auburn game. So that's something that needs to improve, because Will Greer is he's gaining confidence each and every week. He's getting better and better.
Oh yeah,
he's making plays. You know, on with his feet, with his arm. They're being aggressive now. I mean, granted, I don't think their offense is where our offense is. They had to fight to come back and make some plays to beat Tennessee. The Ole Miss game was, one of those, I think you chalk it up to that emotional game at your home stadium, and they just came out with a great game plan, executed flawlessly. I'm not poo-pooing what they're doing, because defensively they are the shit.
They are damn good on defense. It's a matter of, can they go up against another stout defense and score enough points?
Right, and that's going to be the key. It's LSU needs to do some things offensively early to kind of shake them up,
loosen
them
up. Yeah,
off balance, shake them up, loosen them up, do what they need to do.
I think you'll see a few of those jet sweeps coming this week. Just to kill that over pursuit. We haven't run that in a couple of weeks, so to speak.
I think they're going to get back to a lot of the formations and things. And you saw a little bit of it come out in the South Carolina game. I think you're going to see a lot more of the pistol spread jet sweep type of offense we ran against Mississippi State and Auburn.
You also haven't seen Harris really run the ball in the last couple games either. Not like he did early in the year, and I think it was saving.
You don't really need to.
Nope.
You didn't really need to in those games, so why do it? There's no sense in risking him getting hurt.
Correct.
At this point, because he's the guy, quarterback, and the other one's not, even though Jennings got in the game the other night, so good for him.
That's nice.
But, there was no reason to do some things with now. I think you kind of go back to, like I was talking about, what they did in Mississippi State and Auburn, where Harris had – I think both of those games were right around 8 carries, so about 50, 60 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Get him out with that read option on the end, because he's got some speed around that.
Just
corner.
Make him respect the backside. You keep that backside defender there, so and that opens up that hole for Fournette.
It's going to be a good little X and O matchup at first quarter, kind of feeling teams out. If the LSU fans who are if they're got their hearts set on Fournette breaking long runs early in the game. Don't look for that to happen in the first. Be patient.
He may have 39 yards in the first half,
Yeah, and he might break one for 87 like he did, on Saturday. I mean, the guy, once he gets in the open field, the dude, he had two guys had angles on him, and he ran
and
right past
gonna
them.
Not going to catch him.
Ran right past him. It was ridiculous. How good that, how much speed, and you don't realize how much speed he has because he's so big. And you should say that about, they said it about Bo, they said it about Herschel Walker. And Fournette, he's that type. Now, he's not at Herschel or Bo's level yet, but he's
getting there quick.
He's at that pace, right. And they put up stats, versus those and what he's done so far. I mean, he's the eighth running back in SEC history to hit 1,000 yards this fast through five games. He's got 12 touchdowns, on pace to set LSU records in both yards and touchdowns for a season. I can say with pretty good confidence, Charles Alexander, I think, ran for 2,000 something back when he played. And another touchdown record, I believe, is LeBrandon Tofield. I think he ran for like 20 touchdowns or something.
22 or something like that.
22. It was 2001 or 2000, something like that. It was one of Saban's first couple years. Then LeBrandon Tofield ran for like 21, 22 touchdowns that year. But he's on pace to break all that. And if we get into an SEC championship game, he pretty should have a good shot at doing that. And that's with missing a game early in the season,
Yeah, if he has that first game, hell, he's sitting at 1,300 yards.
Right. Yeah. Who knows what happens in that first game? So.
But that's beside the point. And the best thing about him, he's worried about winning football games.
You're right about that.
What happens. He wants to win a football game, and he wants to be successful in that way. Everything else is going to come. Look, he's got to know it. If he just does his job, he's going to get his. It's all going to come to him in the long run. But he's going to look even that much better if his team's winning football games.
Without question. Yeah, without question.
I think he understands. Yeah. It's amazing the maturity. And I know everybody builds him up every week, but he just keeps showing it,
Yeah.
He hasn't let it down. It's almost, and I want to use a baseball player's analogy, but it's almost Jeter-esque,
A little bit.
How he just plays ball, he makes the plays, he's solid, he can make that spectacular play, and he does it in a classy way.
And what I like to see on Saturday, by taking him out of that game when he had that little minor injury, was LSU was forced not to have to rely on him in a conference game. And you saw the moves that Darius guys can make in the open field. He runs with a similar style of Fournette, a little more shiftier. He's not straight up the field like Fournette, but he still runs pretty fearlessly.
Or as our buddy says, he never runs over anybody. He always cuts it to the outside.
He was misquoted, Pat. Don't misquote Joe.
I will not misquote Joe because he does have an album coming out.
Off into the distance by Joe Abbott.
For those of you that don't know, you need to go like our Facebook page, Team Cat Tailgating. You'll totally understand that inside joke.
Yeah, you're right about that. That's true. Actually, I don't think I posted it on that. I think I just posted it to the regular Facebook page. But I'll put it on that too, and I might put it on the Go Show page too.
Okay.
So it's a quality picture. It's a quality picture. It was so fitting. And I was caught in the moment.
But you know what else we were looking at? You know, our fullback goes out. You know, which is probably our biggest concern. If I had to name a concern on offense, that's the biggest concern. But with Darrell Williams at fullback, it gives you an option. It does give you another option.
Now, I don't know if he's blowing up linebackers like J.D. Moore can, but it gives you more of a run option.
They have to actually key on him as a runner.
Right, and he can, you know, if he gets past that first line, he can go for. He can go for a long way, too.
And he's not afraid to hit anybody in the mouth.
No, I don't think so. He's not scared. I think he can take a few people out of himself. You know, it's just hard when you're backing up the freaking best running back in the country. And you got an incoming freshman who says, oh, wait a second, I'm pretty good, too.
Yeah, and then you got your fourth guy who's out there just trying to make the field. Say, just put me out anywhere, I'll go.
You know, they say the old adage, of course, you know, is you have two quarterbacks, you ain't got one. Hey, Urban Meyer, Ohio State. But you can never have enough running backs.
No,
You can never have enough running backs in the backfield, that's for sure. Everybody, you know, gets, you know, years past, few of our friends will get mad because Miles never really stuck with running back for an extended amount of time. He seems to be doing that now, but we're still getting all the guys in the game.
But in SEC play, you get beat up so much, you've got to have that. You can't. Oh, yeah, you can't run it. I am so glad that he only had, 19 carries?
20, which is solid. Yeah, it was because he was on pace for 30. I think he had 15 carries in the first half.
But I would like to see in the first half, you know, I know he's getting a tough couple yards, and he's kind of got to get the rhythm going. But for some of them bruising runs where they know they're only going to get 2 or 3 yards, I'd like to see him put maybe Williams in for those carries a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're trying to beat the defense down a little bit, just so Fournette doesn't take the hit the whole time. I know he's getting his rhythm, and I know all that stuff, but if you know that you're just going to, okay, I need 2 yards and I'm pounding it in here, I'd like to see Williams be that guy to pound it and not necessarily give that hit to Fournette.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And early on, they did do that a little bit. There was some times early in the first quarter where Geis was in there for an extended amount of time. So was Williams. I think everything is kind of working right now as far as the running back rotation and everything like that. And you know, if we can get anywhere close to the same type of offensive performance we had Saturday on this coming Saturday, it's going to bode well for LSU. I mean, when's the last time LSU, I think, has out-snapped 83 plays in a game? And we used to talk about all the time how teams were out-snapping us like 80 to 60 and 70 to 55 and things like that. It used to be a complaint of ours a couple years ago. Now it's kind of reversed. And, I mean, we're running for like, I don't know what we are as far as
leading the nation. Every drive going for 12 to 14 plays.
Right.
You know, time of possession was crazy. In the first half, I think it was 21-9.
23 to, it was, yeah, it was something. It was definitely 1-2-1. It was good. So
yeah.
It was definitely solid.
And you could tell when they got to that fourth quarter, South Carolina was done. I mean, well, actually, midway through that third quarter, they were done. They couldn't go anymore and handle the line.
No question. So put a little bow on that. Finish breaking down a little bit Florida action. So Patrick, real quick before we bring in, again, we're going to be bringing in pretty shortly here, Andrew Hutchins from AlligatorArmy.com, SB Nation site. Real quickly, your quick little look ahead to Florida. What do you want to see early on?
Well, obviously, I think we're gonna play. Not necessarily, you know, we've been playing kind of where's the competition? You haven't had that really emotional game at home since the first half of the Auburn game. Mm-hmm. I think finally you're going to get that. I want to call it, the college excitement, you know, mm-hmm. when they come out for a big game. I just hope we don't get too hyped up. You know, what I'm worried about a little bit with Florida is, you know, the back and forth with DBU. I don't want our DBs to come out overhyped, take those extra chances and give up the big plays. Just play solid defense. You know, I'm a little worried about things like that happening. But overall, if we can just get out there, be businesslike, I think Harris has enough snaps under his belt now where he should be good. You know, even in a big game, this is a home game. It's a big game. He's already going against Auburn in a big game. We're good to go. Let's, you know, we really just need to stick to our guns, stick to basics. And if we can just be solid in the passing game like we were last week, just mix it up, I think we'll be fine. You know, I think the spread opened up at what, like 7, and then it, with the money coming in, it dropped to like 4.5, 5 points. So, you know,
Vegas. Okay, yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
You know, Vegas kind of knows where it's at. And Florida's got to play, you know, they played a tough game, what, against Tennessee, but that was a home game. That was their big home game. And obviously we've seen what Tennessee's done, but then Tennessee came back and beat Georgia. So, it's to me, college football is 25% emotion when you get to these big games. So, we control it?
There's two ways you can harness that. You can go in one direction like Florida did against Ole Miss. Don't get too caught up. Be emotional. Have an emotional kind of, you know, let that adrenaline rush feed you. Or be Georgia, who constantly gets caught up in the emotion of things and always lays eggs in big games at home.
Because they don't let the emotion overweighs what they actually have to do on
it
the
does.
Field.
And that doesn't tend to happen at LSU. I will say that.
No, I think you're a product of your coach.
Yeah, my criticisms of Miles are, you know, definitely there. This is one area where I think we're pretty good at as far as big games at home. You know, and I'm not gonna play the whole night daytime thing. That's kind of I think we've proven. I mean, I can't think of last.
It really doesn't matter. It's just a big game.
Right. It's just a big game. It's gonna be, you know, have they announced game? Is game day coming? They're going to Alabama and A&M.
I don't know. That would have to be our executive producer giving us that information.
So, not sure on that one. So,
game day is going to Michigan this week.
Oh, Michigan. And Michigan's playing who?
I think it's Michigan State.
Oh, good. So, they're staying away. That's fine. So
that's even better, yes.
Yeah, that means the parade grounds are free. I'm sure there'll be some other a lot of stuff going on. But
they didn't want to show that SEC bias, you know.
Yeah, we ain't got to worry about that yet. That's fine. That's good.
They'll wait for Alabama to go.
Yeah, that's good enough. That's fine with me. That's fine. That's perfectly fine with me. But I'm right with you, Ed Patrick, as far as early prognostications about this game. Get back to what you were doing against Mississippi State and Auburn. I don't think the stage is too big for Brandon Harris. He's got that start, you know, on his belt on the road. He said that big emotional start against Auburn. I think it's all about taking care of business. They got to have a good week at practice. Leaders need to step up. They need to fine tune those things on defense and special teams, and you know, just play with themselves and keep doing what they're doing offensively. I mean, if we're gonna win games 41-20 all year, 41-17, it's fine. I mean, if we can. Now, I don't know if we're going to score 41 points on Saturday, but, you know, as long as we end up with one more point in Florida, I really don't care. This is a game where, you know, Florida's proven to be a lot better right now than what they've shown so far. They didn't have the letdown at Missouri on Saturday. They took care of business. The defense was suffocating. And,
you know, and if we get down in this game, you know, how do we handle it? That's the key. That's going to be the key. We haven't been down in a game.
Yeah, we haven't trailed yet. So, but our early game plans against the conference team, conference games have been good so far. So even in South Carolina, we got a little bit more of a slow start as opposed to what we did against Mississippi State and Auburn. But boy, we finished a lot better. So, you know,
we can put a full four quarters together.
Right. So. We'll do that. We'll stop talking amongst ourselves, and let's get some Florida feedback and welcome in Ms. Andrew Hutchins, who's joined us before in previous years talking about Florida. He is from AlligatorArmy.com, SB Nation site, covering the Florida Gators. Andrew, how you doing, buddy?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. So kick things right off, man. Jim McElwain comes in first year. I don't know, expectations not really there yet. You know, Will Muschamp kind of, we thought maybe he left that program kind of, I don't want to say shambles, but not, he left it worse than when he took it over, in my opinion. But five, as far as what, 5-0, a big win over Ole Miss a couple weeks ago.
6-0.
Actually, they're six. Remember, they had one more game than us.
Well, what should they had their bye week or not, okay? Shut up, Pat.
It's always before Georgia.
Okay. All right. Good enough. I'll keep that in mind for next year. So we're talking about this again. I mean, Gainesville's got to be pretty excited right now. I mean, a defense that's freaking probably definitely best in the conference right now, probably one of the best in the nation. I don't know what they're giving up points per game-wise, but it's got to be pretty freaking good. And an offense that's coming along, a quarterback in Will Grier who's making strides every week. Some playmakers at running back, you know, defensive backs who are flying to the ball, can cover you one-on-one. You know, what's Florida's weakness right now, Andrew? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I tried to write this down today, especially on the defensive side. I really don't know how you throw on Florida. And, you know, I don't talk about this team's run defense a whole lot because it's just sort of presumed to be a strength of this team. And I think they're still top 20, something like that. Jalen Hurd kind of got them, and Josh Dobbs, with Jalen Hurd running some midline stuff, really did get them at in that Tennessee game. But, you know, five games, essentially, Florida's been very, very good on the ground against run. Run games aren't, you know, obviously Leonard Fournette-equipped run games, but are still, in some ways, decent run games. But, you know, when you throw the ball against Florida, you've got to figure out who you want to target, whether it's Vernon Hargraves, who's going to be a top 10 pick next year, whether it's Jalen Tabor, who's got two pick sixes this year, whether it's Quincy Wilson, who's made some he made an incredible acrobatic pick last year against Florida State, and this year, up until this last week, he was apparently Pro Football Focus's number one graded corner on the team. Are you going to test the safeties? Marcus May's got a pick this year, just had one. Keanu Neal had, I think, a two-pick game last year, and I think he had three total. So really, you just don't. There's not a whole lot of options there. And I think that the best way to attack Florida on defense, period, is by figuring out a way to get your tight end in single coverage against one of the linebackers, because the linebackers aren't very good in pass coverage, or to find some way to isolate someone on Brian Poole such you can make Poole turn and run with someone, because that's the aspect of coverage that he struggles with that other corners don't. So basically, I've given you like these small little things that I actually worry about when it comes to Florida's defense right now. Okay. And I have to say, that's a pretty good feeling to just have these two things are the things I worry about with Florida State.
That's good. Which one made the pick six against Missouri on Saturday where he was right down the sideline and he stayed in bounds and he ran for the touchdown? Which one was that?
That's Jalen Tabor. And the crazy thing is, right, that was
an incredible play.
Great, great play. It was a really impressive way of just keeping his balance mostly. And I think, you know, the run for the pick six was not nearly as impressive as catching that ball, holding it while you're falling, and then somehow regaining your balance. But the crazy thing is, that's not his best pick. He had a one-handed pick against Vanderbilt last year that was an Odell Beckham play.
He's Odell Beckham, a defensive back.
Apparently.
Telling me.
Yeah, he's got the funny thing is he's got Odell Beckham's haircut right now, too. So, you know, that's, I'm sure, part of the power is coming from. But
it's got to be.
I mean, and I think Tabor, you could probably argue, is Florida's set. The way you compare anyone to VH3 for me is he as complete as VH3 is? Because I don't think I've ever seen a cornerback as complete as Hargraves is, especially at the collegiate level. And Tabor's not. But there's ways in which Tabor he's bigger than VH3 for one, and there's ways in which he's actually superior to a guy who I think is the most complete, no flaws corner that I've ever seen. And you could put that same argument on the table for Quincy Wilson, who I think is maybe not quite as talented as the other two, but, you know, grew up the son of a defensive back, knows all sorts of stuff. He's definitely got, you know, some of the same coach's son attributes. Hargraves, who's got a coach who's – his father, I'm sorry, is a coach at Houston right now. You know, these guys are really smart. They challenge each other. They push each other. And I think the DBU stuff is stupid. But I do think that, you know, if you're going to look at two teams that have got a lot of defensive backs, you know, obviously in the pros and a history of being really good on defense and in the secondary, you know, you're going to look at schools like Florida and LSU where there's a culture of these guys always coming to play and coming to practice to perform and, you know, making sure that everyone's on the up and up. And I think Florida is definitely this year tightened up, especially getting both May and Neal, who were suspended and hurt respectively. And then Tabor was suspended for one game. Hargraves was hurt for one game. So really what we've seen for the last 3 weeks is Florida sort of getting its secondary finally in place. And I think what you could see, especially against Ole Miss, a little bit against Missouri, is this is a team that just doesn't like giving up yardage. And it knows, even if it's playing off coverage, how to get to a guy, an effective throw, if you're talking about the quarterback and the defensive line getting there. And it knows, if you're the defensive back, how to get to a wide receiver and affect a potential reception. It's just a really, really good defense. And, you know, there's those two things, the things about getting a cornerback who is Brian Poole, who's really a nickel corner, and making him turn and run, and getting linebackers to force them to cover tight ends or running backs or what have you. Those are the things that I actually worry about. It's really hard for me to look at this team, even objectively, and say, you know, I'm not so sure about this. It's just really, really good.
You know, we were talking about that before you came on the show, how the, you know, I don't know the receiver matchups that you've kind of had with the DBs earlier this year. And we were talking about, okay, yeah, we have these star, quote unquote, you know, 4 and 5 star recruit receivers. Now's the time. If you're going to be a big time receiver, you've got to step up and play against the best, which is going to be this weekend. So I think you're going to have some good matchups out there. We've got, you know, Doral and Dupree and these guys out there. So you're going to see a lot of one-on-one. Okay. It's a man-on-man. Who's going to make the play type of situation. It's going to be a good test. I mean, all the way around, for not only for LSU's receivers, but for Florida's DBs. And, you know, we were talking about somebody's receiver is going to have to step up and actually, you know, let's say, you know, take control on their end and say, I'm not going to let this guy beat me.
Yeah. And I'd agree with that. And I think it's definitely going to be, this is the sort of game. And it's been the case, I think, with Florida LSU for some years now, where if you've got one guy who can step up and make some plays, that one guy could swing the game, especially in a passing game where, you know, you can make a big play and have it turn into the big play of a game that might end up being really low scoring. Last year, I think that Trayvon Doral touchdown that he made over, I don't think it was over Hargraves, but I could be wrong. He made a really good catch in the end zone, and that was, I think, you know, one of the turning points of that game. Recall the Odell Beckham play in 2012 where he fumbled, the Matt Elam play.
Right. Oh, yeah.
He pulled the ball out of nowhere. Yeah, I'm sure you guys do. But, you know, these are the single things that this game seems to turn on year after year. And I do think that you could see DeMarcus Robinson, who is, I think, Florida's most talented receiver. He's a guy who can give pretty much any corner problems just because he's got great body control and really good quickness. But he's also not a guy who I would think of, you know, getting a 50-yard play. He's a guy who's going to make his hay on 15-yarders and maybe 25-yarders. And if he ever figures out how to stay in bounds instead of diving outside while he's dancing, he's the guy who you could turn to move the chains in some ways. Now, when I look at LSU's receivers, I think Dupree's really, really good. And I think he could probably be that guy who makes a big play this year. I don't like Doral quite as much. But, you know, I just don't know what the matchups are going to be. Florida didn't really do what people thought they were going to do with Ole Miss and put Hargraves on Laquan Treadwell. They let Treadwell sort of float around the field and end up on whoever he was on without, you know, giving him Hargraves as a shadow. And it worked out. Treadwell really didn't have a great game. There was one play where he got loose down.
Kind of double teaming from the backside, just kind of keep that safety help on him.
Yeah, there was some safety help, I think, but I don't really think that it was so much Florida bracketing anybody in that game as it was Florida really affecting Chad Kelly and making him throw the ball a lot faster and or, you know, bring him down than he really wanted to. And I think that was really the key in that game. And I'm not sure, you know, I would say that LSU's offensive line is obviously going to be significantly better than the sort of beat up version of Mississippi offensive line that we saw. But, you know, Florida can make you make decisions a lot faster. And if it can do that to a quarterback who we think is pretty good in Chad Kelly, well, I think, you know, if you look around the SEC, he might be the best or second best quarterback in the conference. You know, you can get some mistakes too, and you can hope that I think on both sides of the ball, you can hope that the quarterback making a mistake is what's going to be the fuel for the team in this game. You know, I think LSU can certainly pressure Greer, can certainly get past Florida's offensive line to pressure Greer. But, you know, we don't know, I don't think, either Harris or Greer, who's going to be more likely to make a mistake. And I don't think that we know for sure who's the most likely candidate to make a big play on offense, other than Fournette, which is sort of – we'll get to that, but that's just sort of a given. I just don't know what we're going to get out of these passing games. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this year's matchup.
Yeah. How much – and I'm thinking back to LSU's 2011 season and how much – during the early part of the season, LSU's offensive success was a direct result of how good the defense was, giving them short fields and things like that. How much of Florida's offensive success this year has been a result of Florida putting them in great situations?
You know, there's a little bit of that. Florida, up until this last week against Missouri, had not scored on its first drive since 2013 against South Carolina. So, you know, it was not an offense that was immediately clicking out of the gate. But at the same time, I think Florida's done a fairly good job of driving full fields and not necessarily, you know, not driving 90 yards, but getting a 60 or 70 yard drive and punching it in for a touchdown is not something that I think is out of the realm of possibility against a lot of defenses. Florida's figured out ways to make the talent on hand maybe better than some of its parts in some ways. And I think that Will Greer especially has developed into the sort of quarterback who you can trust sometimes to make a 15-yard throw on a third down. Or you can hope that he will not screw up on a play where he's given four or five options and maybe has to figure out which one of the third, fourth, and fifth option is the best. I think those things, you know, you talk about the defense obviously feeding into what the offense does, even if it's not through field position, it's just through momentum or something like that. And I think there's definitely some truth to that. You could point to that first touchdown Florida scored against Mississippi was after a punt that came after a three and out that Florida just sort of pinned Kelly's ears back, and sacked him, I think, twice on that first drive, or maybe sacked him and then forced an incompletion really quickly. And that, I think, gave the offense sort of the confidence to take some more chances. And I think, you know, if you've got an offense that knows that even if the defense isn't necessarily giving you fantastic field position or if it's not producing turnovers that really stop the other offense, if you know that your defense is going to be able to back up, you know, if you don't do the thing right and if you throw three incompletions, that I think is a freedom that a lot of quarterbacks don't necessarily have. And I think that's something that, you know, you could look at both Harris and Greer and say, you know, if this empowers a guy to go make a throw that he would not otherwise make because the play caller is not thinking the play caller, if he thinks the quarterback can make the throw but isn't having to think, do I want to throw a pick in this situation, I think that's a major thing. And I think Florida's offenses of the last few years were maybe sort of hamstrung by the idea that the offense really needed to not put the defense in bad situations, which is obviously counterintuitive, but you know, so was a lot of Florida football under Will Muschamp. And I think this McElwain offense, and especially the way that the McElwain offense and the Jeff Collins defense work together, suggests to me that a lot of the governor that you might have had on a quarterback is off now.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, you can see it from the outside, just looking in, the culture around there changing.
Yes.
Obviously, everybody always wants to talk about the one time that he just jumped in. I forget the guy's name.
Kelvin Taylor.
Yep. Just jumped in his face. But, I mean, overall, just from the day one, you know, I was kind of reading up a little bit and stuff like that. It just seemed like from day one he came in and said, we're going to establish an identity. We're going to figure it out. We're going to build this on defense. And, you know, it's given Florida some direction is what I want to call it. You know, they thought they were going to be defensive U because they had Muschamp as a coach, but that wasn't necessarily the case. Could never find a quarterback to settle on. You know, you had problems off the field. You know, basically, McElwain's been a stabilizing influence on that program so far, and that's probably bigger than the X's and O's out there, right? You know, looking at it from the outside.
I mean, I think the biggest thing that Muschamp failed at was finding the quarterback. And, you know, it's ironic in some ways that the quarterback that Muschamp found, really, the one that he found in his 4 years in Florida, was Greer, who was a guy who was really highly recruited coming out of high school, somebody that Brent Pease targeted really early in his 10 years as an offensive coordinator, and a guy who he got to commit, a 2014 recruit who committed to Florida in December 2012. You know, obviously the height of Florida being sort of back in that sense then. But, you know, that was a guy that Muschamp didn't play last year, partly because Treon Harris was more game ready at the beginning of the season, partly because Greer came down with some back spasms that really kept him out of even practice parts of last season. But, you know, it's funny, too, that, you know, going from Muschamp under, God, Brantley, Driscoll, Brissett. Yeah, it's really hard to go down the list of all the quarterbacks that Muschamp had to start. But McElwain's had two. He's had Harris, who started that first game, and Greer, who started every game since. And I think both having the quarterback and having sort of the confidence that comes with the quarterback and the breath of fresh air, really, that comes with an offense that can do things other than shoot itself in the foot. Yeah, those things I think are really valuable. And I don't really buy that there was a huge culture change from Muschamp to McElwain. I think a lot of the Muschamp era was really a player's era too, and I think that a lot of the Muschamp players who stayed on to McElwain were probably still thinking, yeah, I like Muschamp, and you know, I like McElwain, but I wasn't recruited by McElwain, and this is my guy, but I'm perfectly happy to play for this guy too. And I think that's maybe a credit to Muschamp, is that he's got a lot of players who were his guys playing really well under McElwain.
Well, that and winning cures a lot of that too.
Yes, and absolutely the thing that I think is the most important is that Florida came into the season not knowing really what it was. Three or four games in, especially four games in after that Tennessee win, you could think, okay, we are actually good. We can come back in these games. We can do these things. It's not going to be like the last 2 years where everything went wrong. And you can build off of maybe being, I don't want to say average, but good. And I think Florida was, you know, even underlying all those Muschamp miscues and so on and so forth, and obviously a lot more losses than people would expect from a good team, a lot of the performance under Muschamp, even in 2013 and 2014, was good. The advanced stats suggest that Florida was decent. You know, it was not Florida sort of falling off a cliff. It was Florida losing a lot of close games, Florida throwing some games away on turnovers that really shouldn't have happened, Florida doing things that it just didn't have the capacity to overcome in some ways. And when you go from doing those things to not doing those things, and Florida's been really good, especially when it comes to turnovers this year, go figure, the team's going to get a lot better, and especially the results are often going to look a lot better. And I think the enthusiasm plays into that too, but you know, the basic thing that has changed, I think, is that Florida has a different quarterback who is a better quarterback, or at least performing like a better quarterback. And, you know, it might be that simple, and it might not last if Greer doesn't continue to play well. He's a redshirt freshman, so I think there's a lot of variability in there just because of his age. But, you know, the quarterback being good is the key to playing football really well in 2015. Doesn't matter what level you're on. Doesn't matter what defenses you're facing. Doesn't matter what scheme you're running. If you've got a good quarterback, you've got a chance. Florida appears to have a good one now.
Yeah, he does. And I think, you know, he's definitely, you know, let's see, y'all played on the road at Missouri. Mm-hmm. Y'all had a couple of home games, obviously, against Ole Miss and Tennessee, big games. You know, this is probably going to be his first stepping out into a venue that a very, very – not that Missouri's not a – you know, SEC road game, so to speak, but he's going to step into that really hostile environment come Saturday night, you know, so
there's a difference between Faro Field. Yeah, there's a difference between Faro Field and Death Valley, I think, maybe.
Yeah, just a little bit, you know, so we'll see how he comes out and handles that crowd noise, that emotion, you know, everything that goes along with playing in Death Valley. Same thing for us when we go into the swamp, you know, that mystique of the swamp, you know, so it's a totally different experience. You know, that's something that I feel he's going to have to mess with. That's where we obviously going to have an advantage this weekend. That home field, playing off of that emotion. We talked about it earlier. I think that's going to play a big part in this game.
Yeah, I definitely think that if LSU gets up early in this game, it could get ugly. I mean, I don't necessarily think that LSU's a ton better than Florida when you look at especially a position-by-position breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that this is a team that is built in a lot of ways, especially when you've got a Fournette, to run down teams from ahead. You know, if LSU's up 14-3 or 14-0 in the second quarter and Fournette breaks a 50-yard run, you know, I don't think Florida's going to give up, and I don't think even the Florida teams under Muschamp would have given up. We saw Florida fight really, really gamely in 2013 at LSU. Tyler Murphy was hurt in that game. People don't necessarily realize that, but he got hurt pretty early and just sort of fought through it, and Florida couldn't do anything on offense, but just didn't quit and kept playing the entire game. which was, I think, pretty weird for the way that Florida was sort of equipped to play right then. But, you know, this team isn't going to quit either, and it's got more offensive firepower, so she could maybe come back. And yet, I don't know that I would believe in that comeback like that if LSU gets up. I just think that you can hand the ball off to Fournette 40 times, have him run for 200, 250 yards. You know, you don't have to worry too much about the defense not being great or Brandon Harris not throwing the ball accurately more than 75% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
These things, if you build a lead, you could just sort of let go by the wayside. And I think that's the thing that Florida needs to avoid most.
You're right. And I'm, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about, like, I'm just thinking back to Saturday, the South Carolina game. You know, LSU has that lead,
mm-hmm.
but then you know, the defense, you know, gives up a big play. But it plays right to LSU offense's game plan's hands because the defense just got off the field from getting pounded by Leonard Fournette. Their offense just scored in 55 seconds back in due. Play against Leonard Fournette, which you know is going to be an 8-10 play drive, and they kind of come deal with it again. So actually it's kind of like, you know, tit for tat with LSU. Okay, our defense gave up a big play. You know, we don't want our defense giving up big plays. At the same time, that defense is winded. We just scored on them. Guess what? We're going to go back and do the same damn thing. Kind of what you saw LSU do against Auburn and South Carolina. You know, Auburn hit a couple of big plays, so did South Carolina. But LSU just came right back and did what LSU does, and that's ball control and run the clock. And, you know, and that's what makes LSU even better when they're up.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing, too, is that LSU is better at that core competency than a lot of teams are at whatever their core competency is when they see LSU. You know, I think Florida's is probably playing defense and not getting into any sort of really sticky situations on offense. But when you go in and you play defense against a team that's got – and I'll say this about Fournette. I think he's the best college football player that I've seen possibly ever. He's really that good. I'm not saying this just to hype you guys up. I just think he's really that good. If you go in and you think, okay, we've got to stop this guy and get what we can, you know, I don't know if you are going to be able to say, well, what we can do is better than what he can do.
Yeah.
You know, it's a thing where you're hoping that you get your core competency over a really, really good player in ways that I'm not sure that Florida's really ready to do it. And the other thing, too, I was going to say about long drives. You know, Florida's been able to string together some of these long drives, but they also spent the entire third quarter against Missouri going three and out back and forth. I think there were 11 possessions in the third quarter of that game without any points scored, except on Tabor's pick six, which should tell you a little bit about how Florida plays when things aren't really going well on offense. So, you know, that potential there is, I think, also something that could turn into an avalanche if things go wrong.
Yeah, you've got to get points. If you're going to sustain a long drive, 5 minutes or more, you've got to get points out of there. Even if it's just field goal, you've got to get something out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think one of the things you talk about, whenever you're facing a team, when you have a guy, the caliber of Leonard Fournette, any team in that matter has a guy who's that much of a focal point of the offense, it's really not – beneficial for a defense to say, we've got to stop this guy because somebody else can beat you. Play your defense, force the second and third and longs, and guess what? The rest of the stuff's going to take care of itself. And I think that's kind of the mentality I think Florida needs to take in any team for that matter.
We saw it last weekend when we played South Carolina. Farrell Cooper was the offense mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to get his yards. He's going to get his play. He's going to break one, but, you know, if you shut everybody else down, that one player can't necessarily beat you.
Yeah, you know, not necessarily. I mean, it's true in most cases. I mean, you definitely roll the dice and you play it that way versus the other way, and the odds are, I think, more in your favor as far as in my opinion. So, you know.
But Leonard Fournette's not most cases, to be
no,
fair.
No, it's not. No, it's cool to have that. It's good to have that those pocket rockets as your whole cards. It's you know, it's pretty cool. So you know, we LSU, you know, it's fun times and LSU, and that's what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. Is it was good to see him. I don't want to see him get nicked up, but he got nicked up against South Carolina in the third quarter. It took him out for the rest of the game. It was good to see them get other guys involved because I thought in some of the Syracuse and the Eastern Michigan game, that we were becoming too reliant on Leonard Fournette. And that's something I didn't want to see in the games against Florida, against Alabama, against Ole Miss, because we become too reliant on Leonard Fournette. All of a sudden, you know, the rest of the team, the rest of the playmakers on offense might be sleepwalking, and when it's time for them to make a play, they're not ready. They drop a pass, for instance, you know, things like that. You know, it's something that you got to keep everybody involved, because I mean, A, it keeps defenses off balance, and B, it makes you more effective as an offense. It's that simple. I mean, that's Florida. I mean, football's not a complicated game. It's dominating on the line of scrimmage and, you know, finding ways to, you know, create mismatches. And that's all it is. I mean,
and don't turn the ball over.
And don't turn the ball over, you know.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, I can be a coach. What the hell?
So. There you go. We call all our offensive plays anyway, for the most part.
But if you can't stop them, does it matter?
You're right, you know.
Yeah.
Execution is the key.
Without question. So, all right, Andrew. A little. Can I make a prediction before we sign off here? Are you shy away from that kind of stuff? Whatever you want to do, it doesn't matter.
I don't shy away from it. But Florida fans gave me a lot of crap because I predicted Ole Miss, I think, by 17 points or something. I did not think Florida was able to, you know, shut down Ole Miss's offense in that game. I thought it was going to be a much different game than it turned out being. And so I'm not necessarily – I do think LSU wins. I'm not sure what the score is going to be. I think it's probably going to be low scoring. I think it's probably going to be a Fournette show. I just don't know. I think that if Greer plays well, Florida's got a chance. If he doesn't, that's probably Florida not having a chance. And I think Fournette's going to get his regardless. So if you say something like that turns into 21-17 or 24-20 or something like that, okay. That makes some sense, I think. And they could possibly even be lower scoring than that. I just don't see either team really. If an avalanche happens, I think it's going to be LSU's. But I just don't see a blowout being the logical prediction. The logical prediction is a close game.
I don't believe that either.
There's a lot of fun.
It's going to be nerve wracking and finger biting and all that crap too. So it's
the hallmark of the rivalry, right? This is not a rivalry that's built for these blowouts. Blowouts are fair, and we don't savor them.
In the SEC, college football is better when the two teams that, you know, are typically usually two of the more consistent teams on both sides, on the East and West, have to play each other every year. It's awesome when this game means something, and that's because Florida fans travel well, and I'm looking forward to me and Pat talk about it every week. We sit in the opposing team section. That's where our season tickets are, and we have a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, we have a lot of fun with the opposing team.
We elbow Alabama women in the head accidentally, and you know, shit just happens, you know. this is why I love the whole atmosphere of college football, and everybody does. And that's what I'm looking forward to the most is the lead up to the walk to the stadium is interacting with Florida fans, walking back and forth, the good natured, you know, jibber and jabber, not getting too serious and getting into stupid fights and crap like that. That's dumb.
One of the really nice things about LSU fans for Florida fans is that you're not Georgia fans, you're not FSU fans, you're not Miami fans, you're not Tennessee fans. We don't hate you. We might not love your team, we don't hate you.
Sure, right. So, but we are looking forward to you. Are you making a trip by chance?
I don't know. We'll see. It's looking possible, but it's not guaranteed. So you don't want to put anything out.
Sure. I hear you. Okay. All right. He's Andrew Hutchings from AlligatorArmy.com. Where can they, social media wise, where can they find y'all and you?
You can find me and y'all at Alligator Army on Twitter. AlligatorArmy.com obviously is the website. Alligator Army is also on Facebook. You can find me at Andy Hutchins, A-N-D-Y, Hutchins, H-U-T-C-H-I-N-S, on Twitter, if you'd like. I mostly talk Florida stuff at Alligator Army, so feel free to find me there. But, you know, I'm perfectly willing to talk no matter what you want to talk about, so feel free to find me.
Very good. He's Andy Hutchins, again, from AlligatorArmy.com. Andy, we appreciate you joining us, and good luck on Saturday. And if you make that trip, hit up Podcat on Twitter. He'll let you know where we're tailgating at, man. Feel free to come on by and hang out, man. We have a good time every week.
Thanks very much for the luck and for the invitation.
No problem. All right. All right, welcome back to the Ghost Show. It's time, Patrick Morris, for the ATVS Ghost Show Pick'em Challenge. You can compete for weekly prizes and a season-ending prize as well. Of course, you can. We're picking 11, 12 games against the spread. You can go to www.andavalleyshook.com to find the link. Don't feel bad if you haven't joined, if you haven't been playing all season. Just join up right now if you're listening and you feel like picking some games against the spread. And just to have some fun, go for it. Very competitive here with the leader, only 11 games over 500. I was up there and then followed up a 10-2 week last week with a 3-7 week this past week. So I'm rocking on, Pat.
Oh, you are? I heard you got gypped out of a prize this week.
I did. Yeah, because I'm a. We had this discussion a couple of years ago when I finished first somewhere. I'm a unpaid intern basically at this for Andy Valley Shook and the Ghost Show. So I am not eligible.
Yeah.
So I'm not eligible. So I'm just here to. I'm window dressing, basically. So. But we're going to run
it happens.
I don't know how many games there are this week. 1, 2, 3. It's about a dozen, 11 or 12. We're not going to go through every game. We're just going to pick about 4 or 5, maybe 6. But, Patrick, we'd be remiss if we did not talk about the situation at hand. When we originally recorded the show, we did it on Sunday night. The news of Will Grier had not come out yet. So here we are talking about now, before we get into the picks, and we'll talk about what effect it has on the game itself when we get to picking the LSU-Florida game. But for those that do not know, Will Grier has been suspended for a year because of PED use. I don't know what the substance is. I don't know if that's come out. But he will not be playing on Saturday. Treyon Harris will get the start. A person who was in a competition with Will Grier early on in the season. Will Grier kind of overtook him. And then even more fold than that, Treyon Harris was suspended for a game for marijuana use. So currently, the suspended quarterback is being replaced by a man who has already been suspended once. So, and I believe was the quarterback for most of the season last year, if I'm not mistaken. So he does have some game experience, but it's not so much the offense that is the concern for LSU. So, we'll dive into what effect this might have when we make the predictions for the game. So. There's really not much more to say. We were trying to get our boy Andy Hutchins back on to talk a little bit about it, but from what we understand, Jim McElwain said that they're going to go through an appeals process, but it doesn't matter. He is definitely out for the game on Saturday. I was able to tune in for a couple minutes of the press conference. He was very remorseful, very sorry. You know, part of you feels bad for him. You know, he's just a kid, a college kid, but at the same time, made a mistake. He's got to deal with that mistake. It's unfortunate for them, but hey, man, it's life.
I mean, it is what it is.
You make decisions that could possibly affect you or teammates. You have to live with those. You have to live with those decisions if you're caught. If they're the wrong decisions. So that's Tyrann Mathieu had to deal with that in 2011 at the end of for the 2012 season, and he's bounced back and you know. Have a nice career in the NFL. Let's see what Will Grier. Let's see how Will Grier responds. And now, abusing drugs is not the same as abusing. You know, he's not abusing steroids. He took a banned substance. You know, we don't know what the substance was. So, that being said, let's dive into some. Let's dive into some picks, Patrick. You want to knock that out real quick?
Yeah, let's give the people our expertise.
All right, let's go. Let's see what's an intriguing non. What's an intriguing out-of-conference matchup? I mean, when I say out-of-conference, I mean another conference matchup. We have, most recently, now, I also heard this, now, Steve Sarkisian, his contract's been terminated from what I understand. I don't know if it was originally a leave of absence. Now, I'm hearing ruffles of the contract actually being terminated. But USC, with an interim coach, has to travel to South Bend, Pat, to take on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I'm sure that number is going to jump, but according to our front office pool, it is at 5.5 in favor of Notre Dame. Patrick, I'm going to lead this one off, and this is the only time of year I'll pull for USC is when they play Notre Dame, but I can pull for them all I want, but Notre Dame is going to win this game going away.
I hate to say, USC's they don't know what they're doing. They have no identity whatsoever. What are they going to run the ball? Are they just going to try and get their quarterback numbers? What are they going to try and do? I think Notre Dame, at least they know what they're doing at home. Notre Dame wins this game easily. I agree.
Right. And they said the coaches had to pull him out of the huddle because he was speaking incoherently during a game. He's getting sloshed at halftime. I don't know what it is, and the pressure just got to him, and he developed a drinking problem. But I like Sarkisian, man. I don't know the guy, obviously, personally, but from what I've seen from him as a coach when he was at Washington, LSU played him, I think his first game, his first home game, coaching Washington, LSU played him, and they damn near beat us when Jake Locker was the quarterback. So hopefully this guy gets himself straight and is able to rebound himself. It's a go-show pick'em of redemption stories and rehabilitation, Patrick.
That's our theme. Yes, it is, of course.
That's a theme. All right, let's go. Let's see what else. What other good game? Oh, Michigan State. This is where game day is, I believe. Michigan State traveling to the Big House. Michigan State getting 7.5, an undefeated team going to Ann Arbor. Jim Harbaugh's got that team playing really, really well. Michigan State is, undefeated, but, an unimpressive 6-0. I don't know. They impressive early on. That win against Oregon doesn't look too good anymore. They've kind of limped a couple of victories here and there. They're going to Ann Arbor. But getting 7.5, Pat, I don't know, man. I'm going to take Sparty to cover this.
No, I'm not going to take Sparty in this one. I watched a little bit of Michigan State. They're not a, they're overhyped. They had that good win early in the season, which bumped them up there. But I don't think they're that good a team. I think they have a lot of holes. Michigan is hot. They got the Harbaugh factor. They're playing at home. Nah, Michigan wins this one easily.
Yeah, you may sway me on that. I might change that before week's end. I mean, you think about Michigan's loss to Utah and how good that looks now. You think about Michigan State's big win over Oregon and how bad that looks. And you kind of combine it to, and conventional wisdom says, yeah, go Michigan. But when conventional wisdom says do that, you do the opposite. So I don't know. Who knows what else? For purposes of this show right now, I'm going Sparty to cover. Let's see what we got. All right, let's go into some conference action. That's about enough of that other mess. This is an intriguing matchup, Patrick. Ole Miss traveling to, I think they're playing in the Liberty Bowl. I think it's where Memphis plays all their games, actually. But they're going to Memphis. Memphis is undefeated. They got a pretty good quarterback out there. Lynch, I think, is his last name. Throws the ball around pretty well. Big dude. They got a pretty good team. Ole Miss, coming up, they lost to Florida a couple weeks ago, and they pounded the Lobos in New Mexico State the other night. So, but Memphis getting 10.5 at home. Patrick, I'll let you lead this one off.
I still can't pick Memphis. I think Ole Miss, they rolled the last game. I think they're going to roll in this game until they get back in SEC play. Just way too much Ole Miss for Memphis. They're not the caliber of SEC team that Ole Miss is.
No, I don't think so either. It's just when it kind of just sticks out a little bit, the fact that just because Memphis is 5-0, I mean, watching a couple nights, I called watching against Cincinnati, I think, one Thursday night, and that was really about it. Just kind of intriguing. I don't know that I can't tell you the last time Memphis has ever been undefeated. So just late in the season, and they got a pretty good little rivalry with, if you want to call it a rivalry, with Ole Miss. I mean, they're 60 miles, 80 miles apart. So proximity rival, much like Tulane LSU is a rival. In that regard,
yeah, but that don't mean anything. It doesn't.
Yeah. It does. I'm with y'all. I'm going Ole Miss too. Memphis. I don't even know what conference they're playing these days. I don't know if they're still CUSA, if they're playing a Tulane conference or not. So, but no, Ole Miss is too good. I don't see them. I don't see Ole Miss having an issue on Saturday with that game.
No.
Alabama, Texas A&M. Texas A&M at home, getting 4.5 at Kyle Field, Patrick.
This is a toughie. You know what? I am actually going to go with A&M in this game. I am going with the 12th man. I haven't seen, even though Alabama yet it came out impressive against Georgia. Georgia, we know, doesn't play well on emotion. I think A&M actually is going to take this game at home and do their thing and cover.
Yeah, I like I think I see this as a field goal game either way. We know about Bama's front seven. I don't know how much that secondary has been tested to this point this season. They didn't have an issue against Georgia because Georgia just flat out laid an egg, and then that win against Georgia don't look all that do good now, you know, all of a sudden. After Georgia blew a 21-point lead in Knoxville on Saturday. So I'm gonna go with you on this one. I'm gonna side with you on this one. I like A&M to definitely cover. I think it's a pick'em game though, either way, as far as who wins and who loses. I think it's a field goal game either way.
I think it's a turnover game. One, you know, Alabama mistake free. You know, they're there. If they make that mistake, A&M wins.
Yeah, if they make mistakes like they did against Ole Miss.
It's a blowout, I think, at that point.
Attack, yeah, that passing attack can definitely light them up like we saw Ole Miss, like we saw Chad Kelly do a little bit. So if A&M can turn Alabama over, that doesn't bode well, especially when you're on the road. So that's something definitely to watch out for in that regard. Speaking of Georgia, they're hosting Missouri. Missouri 4-2, just coming off that loss to Florida. Georgia, two losses in a row, and 16.5-point favorites against Missouri. Just lost Nick Chubb, but this guy Sony Michelle, I think, or Sony Nichols, Sony Michelle, I think his name was, did pretty well in Chubb's absence. 16.5. Missouri usually plays Georgia pretty tough since they've been in a conference. I don't know. I don't want to lay the 16.5, Pat. I like Missouri. Missouri's got a decent defense. They got after Florida a good bit. I think they can get after. I think they can get after Grayson Lambert as well and wreak some havoc enough to cover that 16.5.
See, I'm going to go the other way here. I think this is a win-win for the Chubb game, and I think they're gonna play – God, I hate to say Georgia playing emotional because they never play well when they play with emotion. But, hell, their backs are against the wall. They don't have a choice. They've got to shut Missouri down. They've got to win this game, and they've got to win it convincingly if they want to even have any talk of getting back into any kind of picture. So I'm going with Georgia in this.
They're definitely not out of it as far as as far as the conference goes. I mean, because they went out. They still got to play Florida, and if Florida loses, they're definitely pulling for LSU a lot, you know, big time on Saturday because they got the cocktail party coming up. And if Florida loses to LSU on Saturday, and they take care of Florida, they're right back. They're right back in the driver's seat. They still got a conference, an Eastern Division title to play for. So. That being said, I think they win. I like Missouri to cover the points. Any more I want to talk about before we go into Florida and LSU? Not really. Not concerned about
No West Coasters out there.
Nah, UCLA and I guess we'll dive away real quick from the SEC and go UCLA and Stanford. UCLA getting 5.5 at Stanford. When they lose, they lost, what, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
That was now?
Yep.
And, Stanford's lone loss, I cannot think who that came to. Was it USC?
Northwestern. No, it was Northwestern.
Beat them. That's right. Northwestern beat them. So Stanford's undefeated in the Pac-12, whatever they are. I don't know what side they are. I think they're the North.
They're in the North.
Okay. Thought so. Yeah, they're high up in California. So, I don't know. Everybody who listens to the show knows
UCLA is so up and down with this.
I know. Stanford plays good football.
Which team's going to show up?
This quarterback for Stanford's improved every week. UCLA is always kind of there, but never able to get over the hump. I'm completely on a whim, but give me. I'm laying a 5.5. Give me Stanford.
Yeah, you know what? The thing that I don't like about UCLA is their quarterback is cocky as hell. He's the most cocky. If you ever heard him speak, oh yeah, he's the best. But at the same time, I'm going to go UCLA in this one. I'm going against you again. I just, for some reason, I got to, it's going to be one of those picks on a gut feel. I'm going with UCLA.
All righty. And let's move it on. We're going to wrap it up. Florida LSU in Tiger Stadium, 6 p.m. kickoff. ESPN, that is Nestle and Blackledge. In my opinion, the two of the best as far as like a combination, play-by-play and analyst guy. Following Herb Street are good. If you can tolerate Herb Street, which Herb Street knows his shit, but I like Nestle and Blackledge. I've always liked Blackledge. Nestle's always called a good game, so this is, you know, if I'm watching at home, which I'm not going to be, this is not a bad one to sit at home and listen to. These two guys, but Tiger Stadium, it's 6.5 here. Of course, we know that line's going to move now with the Will Greer situation. Patrick, where you at on this one now?
I'm going with the home team here. I don't think we played a full game this year. I really don't. You know, I know Florida's defense is good. I know we've got some kicking situation things we need to work out, but I just think the motivation here is we're up for a big game. I think we're going to do what we get same way we did it against Auburn. I think we're going to come out strong. I think we're going to pound the ground the rest of the way, and they're going to be playing catch up ball, and I don't know if they can do it with a backup quarterback. So I'm going to say that we are going to cover this.
Jumping out to the early lead is the key, especially with a backup quarterback. Now, we've seen backup quarterbacks not fare so badly against LSU, but it's what LSU is able to do. As far as the whole emotion thing at Tiger Stadium, LSU, as much as Georgia doesn't thrive in those situations, LSU normally does. We normally do. We've played big game after big game. And here's a nice little stat I heard this morning on the radio, Patrick. Seven times, two top 10 teams have squared off in Tiger Stadium, I think. Maybe it was two top 10 undefeated teams squared off in Tiger Stadium. LSU's 5-2 in those games.
Wow, so, not too bad.
Bodes well for a victory. As far as a cover, you know, I agree kind of what Andy said. It's either going to be LSU going away or Florida in the close one. If anybody's going to run away with this, it's going to be LSU, especially now, I think, with the Will Greer situation. But LSU needs to do some things, you know, off the cuff to create opportunity for Fournette, for the passing game, create some matchups with maybe some throws out of the backfield or some running backs, the jet sweeps, things like that. You're going to really find out, you know, what this team's about. Again, we say that, you know, a lot, but LSU really hasn't shown improvement since the Auburn game, but kind of sleepwalking through things against, you know, two subpar opponents. Then you have the whole situation with the South Carolina game getting moved and, you know, all that kind of transpired and all, you know, all that being said, still a 21-point SEC win.
It wasn't there, really in doubt. I mean, if that's what
yeah,
if that's
by any stretch of the imagination, you can't discount a 21-point victory, as unimpressive as it might have looked at times. You can't discount a 21-point victory.
Any team in America would love to have an unimpressive 21-point victory.
I'm sure they would. And like what we talked about, LSU's given up some big plays defensively, and this is completely off, completely by memory, but I want to say every time LSU's given up a big play defensively, the offense has come right back and put it down the other team's throat and scored right out back. And I think it has to do a lot with what I was talking about. With the defense is already on the field, and all of a sudden they got to come right back on the field because the offense scored quickly. That bodes well for LSU's offense. That bodes well. Now, you don't want to see LSU's defense give up big play after big play, which they tend to give up a couple of games. If they keep it to that and that offense continues to do what they're doing, LSU's going to win this game with double digits, in my opinion. I think it'll be low scoring, but I think LSU can pull away. I think LSU has enough firepower to score 30 points in this game. And I don't, you know, every team scored 20 on us so far. Is this the game LSU holds a team under 20? You know, Florida's offense still's got some issues. Will Greer was doing well throwing the football. Their running game isn't really all that spectacular. I think Kelvin Taylor's only averaging like three and a half yards a carry. He's got something like only like five less carries than Fournette for the year, and he's only got like 400 something yards rushing. So do the math on that one. I'm with you, Pat, to wrap it up. I like LSU. I'm sorry. I like LSU in the points. I like LSU, obviously, to win. Never going to pick them to lose in Tiger Stadium.
Nope.
And
Give me a final score.
Give me a final score. Final score. I'm going to say. I'm gonna make it very generic. 31-17.
Oh, I had 31 right on it, but I had 31-13.
Okay, like where it's at. So that'll wrap it up for the pick'em. Again, go to ATVS, Anna Valley Shook. Find the link that Podcat put up there. I don't know if it's up there yet, but it will be. If it's not there right now, it'll be there by tomorrow. And if you're not signed on, go ahead and create yourself a little one of those little what you call them handles, usernames, password. Make these picks. Have some fun with it.
All right, again, that was Andrew from AlligatorArmy.com. Patrick Morris. I think we'll sign off and call it a night, man. Once again, always got to plug the tailgate. Team Cat tailgating. The LSU fans that are familiar with campus, you know where the parade grounds are. Tower Drive on the long sidewalk, right in front of Coates Hall. Look for the Team Cat banner, or we have the Anna Valley Shook banner hanging up right in the front as well. Feel free to stop by and say hello. It's Pasta Liar Week, Patrick. It's Pasta Liar Week. It's George Week.
It's Toby Fest.
It is on. The neighbors next door. It's going to be fun.
It's just plain out and on. Yes.
And it's you're going to hear this show probably Thursday night, but we're recording right now Sunday, and it's Sunday, and I don't want to go to work. I don't want to go to work tomorrow. I don't want to go to work at all this week. I just want to fast forward, and I want it to be Friday. I want to pack the truck, and I want to go to Baton Rouge, and I want to cut loose, and I want to get in that stadium, and I want to make it a living hell for Will Greer and that offense that kind of operate. This is going to be a loud game. It needs to be a loud game, and I can't wait. I'm excited. So
let's do it.
Patrick Morris for Podcat. Andrew Hutchins, again, thank you for joining us from AlligatorArmy.com. If you want to find him on Twitter, go back and rewind it because I can't remember everything he said. I didn't write it down. I'm Kerry Muntz. This has been the Go Show, your original LSU podcast. Again, find us on Facebook, Go Show, at Valley Shook, at Go Show Carry, at Cat Godfather. We're done. Good talk. Go Tigers. Beat the Gators. Finish it.